actually it's not. It's just a set of original works, but it covers all fields and reference to future talks of participants, because many of people listed here are actually in this room, and some people are not listed, but did work in this area, were referred to. So this is kind of working introduction. So motivation. So this motivation is not probably for this room, and I skip it straight away, but there are multidimensional theories, and there will be several talks, and just a few theories with scalar fields. It will be reviewed today and on during workshop further. So I don't want to stop at this point. And the motivation, which probably will be mentioned later, is also this fine-tuning of fundamental constants. So for me, it's a very strong argument to say that there may be variation, because it's the most natural way to explain why fundamental constants so finely tuned for our existence. They're just different in space, so appear in the area of the universe where they're suitable for us. Maybe Liz Morling will mention this later. This anthropic principle will be lecture of Liz Morling, who is not here on Tuesday, about multiverse. So enough about motivation. What I'm going to talk today is basically what people will talk later here. So it's deep net nuclear synthesis. In more details, it will be discussed in the talk of Julian Berenwood later. Quasar absorption spectra, there is a large number of talks about this. Open natural nuclear reactor, so nobody is going to talk, so I'll mention it. Atomic clocks, there will be talks about atomic clocks. Enhanced effects, in atoms, molecules, and nuclear, there will be talk later. Wutker will give a talk, but he will arrive later. And dependence on gravity and scalar fields. I only discussed dimensionless constant. People here know why, so I probably skip this part. Only thing I would like to mention, I discussed variation of two constants. Fine structure constant, which is characteristic of electromagnetic interactions, and QCD constant. Here I need to stop for a second, because alpha strong is a running constant, so it's not a constant at all. And it's not a major problem, because alpha is not a constant too, but alpha is defined for large distances. Alpha strong is not defined for large distances. This expression has four certain distances. So formally it's infinity, but actually theory is not applicable at this point. So instead of defining alpha strong, which is not good for our purpose, we use another parameter, lambda QCD, which shows position of this ball. It's well-defined parameter. It may be defined at large small distances or high energies, where this expression is valid, and it's actually presented in a particle data book. So for us, it's not even important how it's defined. It's important that it's constant, but it has dimension. So in the spirit of this group, we need to define dimensionless parameter. There is another fundamental parameter, some fundamental mass. In this case, it's electron or proton mass. Electron quark mass in standard model proportional to Higgs field or electroweak scale. So here we deal with fundamental parameter which may be called variation of ratio of electroweak scale to strong scale. So it's another most fundamental parameter of the standard model. So it's not so easily defined, but it has play even maybe more important role than alpha. So I'll speak about variation of two parameters. There is also a third parameter, which I don't talk about. For example, lambda QCD or Planck mass. And according to my understanding, there will be no talk about variation of gravity here. But if Maxim maybe...
But this is like fixed force.
Yeah, so...
We have this covered.
Yeah, so there is a third fundamental parameter. Some, for example, lambda QCD or Planck mass. Planck mass is defines gravity, so... Basically, if you go beyond standard model and include gravity, there are three most fundamental parameters. They may be related. Again, I'm not going into the details, but just an example. In grand unification, all constants are defined in terms of single constants for very high energies or very small distances. So actually, inverse values appears here. At some scale, for example, nu zero is energy, unification energy, and nu is current scale. So constants become different because they are running constant. They depend on energy or distance, whatever this new means. And but at some high energies, everything is expressed in terms of single constant. If, for example, we vary this single constant, all variations of fundamental constants are linked, all different derivatives of your value are the same. And if you use definition of alpha strong, which is alpha free, how it's running, how it depends on mass of the electricity, and we use definition of electromagnetic alpha, we can find variation of this parameter, which I mentioned. This variation of this parameter in terms of variation of alpha. Because here, where all this derivative of inverse alpha, we have alpha squared in the denominator. We have alpha squared in the denominator. So, as a consequence, the variation of this parameter contains extra alpha squared in the denominator. So, it may be bigger than the variation of alpha. I wouldn't pay much attention to this because it's only a model, but it just tells that it's not only alpha which is worth studying. Because first, in first course, where all efforts were concentrated on alpha. It's another parameter that's also worth studying because it may, variation may be even bigger. It's not a must. Again, it's a very model dependent statement, but we shouldn't ignore variation of this parameter at least. How this parameter appears in measurements? In spectroscopy, you can measure ratio of electron mass to proton mass, molecular spectroscopy, hypertransduction. They all contain this parameter. And proton mass is mostly lambda QCD. So very small contribution of quark mass, but for our purpose, maybe just ignore its correction. So it's proportional to lambda QCD, but when you measure electron proton mass ratio, you measure exactly variation of this parameter. It will be a number of words of this measurement at this workshop. When nuclear magnetic moments, they appear in hyperfine structure. So if you express nuclear magnetic moments in terms of nuclear magnitude, which is again proton mass, you have dimensionless G factor, which is ratio, contains ratio of quark mass over lambda QCD. It has nothing to depend on except for this parameter. Strong interaction physics involved. And all nuclear energy levels and resonances, of course. So this Oklo problem, Big Bang nuclear synthesis problem, a wave, and thorium problem, which I mentioned briefly. They're all related to this section, nuclear energy levels and resonances. A few theoretical words, very few here. How this parameter penetrates nuclear physics? First of all, we speak about dimensionless parameter, yeah? So it's quark mass over lambda QCD. We can choose units arbitrarily. For our purpose, it's convenient to choose units of lambda QCD. So we measure quark mass in units of lambda QCD. In practical words, it just means that lambda QCD can be put constant, because anyway, we measure quark mass in units of lambda QCD.
So you vary the light quark masses, right?
But yeah,
you keep one fixed, right? Because the bigger ones would also affect the lambda QCD.
Certainly, yeah, I understand it's an all complicated story, but I don't want to go into details here. So. Somehow, it's most efficient way how quark mass penetrates nuclear physics. Pi meson mass is proportional to square root of quark mass. It's the famous theorem. So pi meson mass squared is proportional to quark mass. So when you differentiate pi meson mass, you get 0.5. 0.5 is from this power. So variation of pi meson mass is the strongest one. It contains 0.5 quark mass over relative variation of quark mass. Other mesons and nuclear masses also depend on quark mass, but they remain finite for quark mass zero. So variation is small. So here coefficient 0.5, here coefficient will be small, it's few percent, but it's still visible, so you can detect it. There are several works where K is calculated.
Excuse me, isn't it arguments that the proton and neutron masses are like 20% composed from this strange quark?
Yeah,
so
actually, I would be happy to say no,
it would be more.
Yeah, but I said strange quark mass is special because it's heavy. For strange quark, coefficient will be bigger. I just don't want to discuss it because it immediately goes to topics which is called controversial. There are opinions about this. So there are arguments that nuclear mass contains up to 20% of strange quark mass. Well, at least 10% again. So it's probably so again. I have only opinion because I'm not expert. But what people tell is there are arguments and calculations and experiments in direct which links different values that proton mass can contain up to 20% of strange quark. So strange quark mass appears more significant than light quark mass, even if neutron is not strange. Okay. So having this in mind, we can proceed further. How bioengizen mass, which is again is a very efficient way to penetrate all properties, appears. Neutron magnetic moment. It contains these loopers, known for 40, 50 years. I don't remember when it appeared first. But nuclear magnetic moment contains this loop. So it is here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This loop is actually proportional to pioneer mass. So if you assume that pioneer mass is small in comparison with nuclear mass, first term of expression is pioneer mass. So it's pretty significant dependence. Linear pioneer square root of quark mass. There is a second rule. If you have balanced nucleon in the nucleus, it's interesting.
So you think that this diagram is the most important contribution to the G-factor? And it is proportional to ratio of pion mass to the proton mass. And with the anomalous magnetic moment bigger than unity, the parameter is 1/10.
No, it's perfectly. If you want to go in details, people for 30 years have produced nuclear mass in this loop.
Moment. Yes. But did they succeed?
They did. So you're talking
about but actual calculation from scratch or just a chiral correction on
There are two types. There is, again, I'm not expert, I'm just telling the story. There is internal quark contribution,
right.
Once, and there is loop. So my colleagues, like Craig Roberts and so on, they do both. People who are doing chiral perturbation theory, they try to extract internal contribution from lattice calculations. Craig Roberts' group were doing this Dyson-Schwinger equation or Fadeev equation to extract internal contribution. And they got a very small number. So the major correction still comes from this loop.
But how this loop could give about two?
Because internal contribution factor contains quark mass, not light quark mass instead of
the question is why is this loop is large?
It's huge because the mass ratio is 10%.
It's big. Yes,
it's huge. The mass ratio is small. It's proportional to the pion mass, as you say. But the result is about two for
So
my understanding is that they put an input so that the magnetic moment is equal to something bare, and then they try to calculate
There is some pattern which makes a cutoff.
But this calculation has no sense. If coefficient is huge, we cannot use the perturbative theory.
But who tells it's perturbation theory?
But in this case, it should be more complicated contributions with two pions.
There is two pions, there is infinite loop summation. If you want to
open
chiral perturbation theory view, you can write it. It's 200 pages. So do you want me to discuss it?
So it means the contribution increase with number of pages. And each page is
because we calculate first loop, then calculate second correction, and so on. It's expansion of pioneer mass. In principle, it's infinite series.
But they don't explain the magnetic moment. They have the sort of bare contribution, right? And on top of
I would not trust that you can learn.
You can trust something calculated with chiral perturbation theory. Something you cannot trust anything at all, right?
Something I can trust. So what people like Gasser did for pioneer lifetime, for instance.
But I think this contribution is okay. Higher orders or not? It's my impression. Just this particular loop is okay.
Yeah, but has no relation to the fact.
Because they, if you want again, you want to push me to go into details, they do also lattice calculation. Then compare, they compare current perturbation theory with lattice calculation. But for lattice calculation, they need higher parameter mass. They cannot work for part mass equal to 4 MeV, so they go to higher mass and compare the results for lattice calculation, current perturbation.
In the limit,
and they claim it's
where
okay.
Pion is.
They claim it's okay. It's your choice, okay. Let me proceed.
Yes.
So, this is easier in this case, it's not a loop. It's just time as an exchange which appears, it makes correction to nuclear magnetic moments and spin spin interaction. Actually, there are other Mason's interactions. If you use Mason exchange theory, you can calculate all of them, but their contributions are small. So, what is important part, you cannot deny that here you have square root of part mass, whatever it is. What you're discussing is calculation of A, or here it's B, if you express these terms. Yeah, so it's only a question of how good is B. I think B is good. The authors claim that it's few percent, not just order quantities to me. They claim it's few percent. They also calculated higher terms, which these I may agree, I don't trust. But they're not important for this purpose. For here, you have linear expansion. So this is the difference. And here, I have a huge number of groups here. It's a big team of controversial results, but it's more or less agree, actually. Here, the latest calculation, chiral perturbation theory, Bell model, this Dyson finger Bodeev equation, and semi-empiric, what Maxim already mentioned. You can determine this coefficient just comparison with certain particle reactions, extract this number. For example, here there is indication of this coefficient for strange particles. This contribution to strange particles is 20%, about 50 MeV for nucleon mass specifically. For nucleon mass, about 50 MeV, for strange mass, up to 200 to 150 MeV. So it's not very small. Then we need to proceed to nuclear physics. We need to use Mason exchange theory of nuclear strong interaction. I don't know at the moment. There is an attempt to do it in a different way.
First second, do I understand correctly that if pion is massless,
yeah,
that magnetic moment has its direct value?
No.
And what is mu zero in this?
Mu zero is value without pion as a law.
Without?
Yes.
Free value.
Yeah, why proton magnetic moment or neutrons?
Yeah, but
which is not elementary particles, it's
yes, but still, which contributions are responsible for deviation from mu zero?
Mostly valence quark contribution. Mostly valence quark contribution. Because proton is not elementary particle. There is absolutely no reason to believe that magnetic moments for proton has Dirac value. Absolutely no reason. You can use Bell model. Or this method, Dyson Schwinger and Fadeev equation. So we calculate mu zero in terms of this Dyson Schwinger and Fadeev equations, for example, the relativistic equations, and try to calculate dependence of this mu zero on quark mass. I have a paper, I have it actually upstairs if you're interested, I can show it to you.
No, I just wonder if you write MP over M pi over MP, so the coefficient would be about unity.
I just don't remember. I did it myself also before.
If it is about unity, that means that when you have other contributions, the coefficient is big or what?
No, it's no. I recall approximately. It's not. It's still not unity. It's smaller than one because the major contribution
okay.
comes from the.
No. So if MP is in units of the proton mass, that means that A is about units. So that means that the contribution which is due to square root of quark is small. It's a small part.
Yes.
In this case, a bigger part could depend linearly with quark mass, but be bigger.
Okay, so now I remember
so
the number.
So why is the most
second,
important?
I remember the number. This contribution is 10%.
10%?
Yes.
And the anomalous magnetic moment of the proton is 1.75 bigger
yeah.
than the main one.
It's mu zero.
So that
it's all mu zero.
What is included in mu zero is 200%.
Yes.
So that means that if mu zero very more slow but the bigger effect, it could be more important than any effects related to
the calculation shows it's not.
Well, I think what Victor is trying to say, that mu zero is determined by lambda QCD and
sure.
nothing to do with the small quark masses.
Sure, sure, but it's a big effect, and you have a small effect, which strongly
And he does take it into account, because when he does the variation, he assumes that mu zero varies as proportional to lambda QCD.
No, it's post calculation. Contribution from mu zero is approximately 10 times smaller than this contribution. It's calculated.
Contribution to what?
Derivative of mu zero over quark mass is 10 times smaller than derivative of this term. According to Craig Roberts and company. Yeah, it's another question how good is this calculation, but there was calculation in this contribution.
I was hoping you would say that mu zero and your definition is not dependent on the quark mass.
No, but
now you can.
I don't want to say. No, of course it's. Of course, it's mostly function of this contribution survive if quark mass is zero. This contribution survives if quark mass is zero. It's constant for ultra relativistic quarks. It's constant for quark mass is zero. And this you see, so if there is no reason to believe the dependence is strong here, and it's calculated.
So how do you get a negative sign here? The neutron is a negative sign.
It's in mu zero.
It's in zero.
In mu zero. Yeah. But see, but it's like atom. What's the difference? Atom consists of electrons. So magnetic moment of atom consists of magnetic moment of electrons. Nobody even dream of calculating atomic magnetic moment as EH over atomic mass and denominator. Why you want to do it in proton? Your suggestion basically the same. You compare it. If you calculate atomic magnetic moment of atom, you say it's EH over 2 atomic mass C.
Just a second, and for neutron, you will write similar equation.
Yes, absolutely.
But I would expect from point of view of QED, for neutron, you have similar diagram as in QED, that it should depend on pi mass squared. If photon would have a mass.
Maybe we'll discuss it in private, because I will never finish this day. You can't violate your own rule. You don't stop discussion with me.
Well, we have lots of times allocated for discussion. We can
okay,
calculate
so we'll do it,
this loop altogether.
So the only thing I want to conclude here is absolute nonsense. Compared with the Dirac moment of protons, the same as for atoms, say that atomic magnetic moment has atomic mass and denominator. Okay, so I'll proceed further and leave discussion to later. We will have a discussion plan every day. Deep band nuclear synthesis. So I only discuss dependence on quark mass because there is also activity about alpha. If someone is willing to review it, it's very welcome, but I just don't have time. Depends on quark mass, because there is a reason to believe it's more important. So there's plenty of work done here. And in our first estimate, we assume dependence on deuteron binding energy only, because there is exponential sensitivity to dependence on deuteron binding energy. People measure abundance of deuterium, helium-4, and lithium-7. And there are calculations of these abundances, a very slight mismatch. So this is a famous picture, how a product of abundance of different elements depends on temperature. Here, temperature decreases here. And in certain area, all abundances repeat deuteron abundance, because you cannot produce anything without deuteron. You first need to produce deuteron. So it's deuterium bottleneck, but the temperature is smaller than 0.3 MeV, all abundances follow deuteron abundance. And if you consider, for example, this reaction, which is destruction of deuteron, it requires energetic photon. So it's proportional to e to the minus deuterium mass over temperature. And deuterium binding energy. Deuterium binding energy is pretty large, and result temperature is 30 keV. So you have something like e to the minus 70. It's a final stage. So here it's clear why dependence of deuteron binding energy is so strong. And in the first work, with only very deuterium binding energy, and we found that there is perfect agreement between observation and calculation if you change deuterium binding energy by 2%. It also leads to agreement between this barium to photon ratio, which is extracted from Big Bang nuclear synthesis and cosmic microwave background. Why deuterium is also good? Because deuterium is a shallow level. So minor variation of strong potential, leads to a significant variation of deuterium binding. You can even keep this level out if you change deuterium binding energy. The rest of calculation is model dependent. It's assumed certain model. And here, we indeed assume a strange quark plays an important role, because in here there is exchange by sigma meson, for example, and also nucleon mass depends on the strange quark. So we obtain pretty strong sensitivity. So deuterium binding energy changes 17 times stronger than strange quark mass. So this means that this 2% end up with 0.1%. Then we did the next work, and this was important work here, was done by Jens Stern and Viterich, which take into account different elements here. And then Julian Berengut also did calculation. He will probably tell about this here. So now it's more extensive work, which involves abundances of different elements. And then we calculated dependence of all binding energy and quark mass, and there was a calculation of dependence on nuclear meson mass, of quark mass. So this allows to write a more consistent equation. Here is skipped strange quark mass, because it's a more complicated topic, and it depends only on light quark mass. The conclusion is basically the same. There is abundance of deuterium, there is abundance of helium, and there is abundance of lithium. And there is some mismatch. Here is a ratio of measured to calculated abundance. Especially important here is lithium, because there is difference of 3 times. So if we assume that it is due to variation of quark mass, we can find this solution for each of equations. And surprisingly, they are consistent. It's not trivial, because again, here we have huge difference, and here no difference. So consistent solution is because lithium is extremely sensitive to variation of quark mass.
Well, lithium is sensitive to the timing of very, very much. So if you kind of delay it, you have large effects.
Yeah, so non-trivial fact, finally, is that there is consistent solution for all the equations.
Excuse me. For the lithium, there are also recent reports that it can change the primordial abundance due to interaction of cosmic rays.
So there are, it's not recent reports. There are maybe, I don't know, maybe Maxim knows better.
It's lithium 7. You cannot change it by much with the cosmic rays because you would be generating lots of lithium 6. So this is lithium 7. So the story here is very murky because, you know, there could be a factor of 3 depletion in the atmospheres of populations of stars. Keep running papers on this all the time.
So it's
still, you know, very controversial. So.
It's a live topic. I mean, the people working on it. So this is, again, an assumption that the difference is due to variation of quark mass.
You cannot generate lithium 6, though, right? That's probably
Yeah, because Maxim has another brilliant idea for explanation.
What I'm saying,
but it's also exotic.
There is also an anomaly with lithium 6, which is not kind of settled, right? Because you have lots of lithium 6, which is flat with me.
No, Jacob wanted to tell something about lithium 6. But he will tell about this himself. How the balance of lithium 6 is linked to variation of quark mass. But it's not my topic. Okay, so this is again intermediate conclusion. If it's due to variation of quark mass, there is a certain number which is high statistical significance. Was the value of quark mass was different. Then we go into quasar picture. There will be a lot of talks here, so I should speak very briefly about this topic. So there are wonderful spectra, there is quasar, some absorption cloud, and ILF, and there are narrow lines here in absorption cloud with this low density cloud. Emission line on broad also. Accuracy is much lower here. What we used here is what astronomers started to call many multi-jet method. So it means that every line has dependence on alpha, which is pretty simple because all relativistic connections to electron energy are proportional to alpha squared. It's actually a dimensionless parameter. Ratio of relativistic connections to energy is proportional to alpha squared. If you remember hydrogen formula in textbook, it looks exactly the same way. But here it's actually valid approximately for any pattern explaining what's going on. And also proportional to nuclear charge. So the relativistic connections are very different than light atoms and heavy atoms. So what you can do? You can take some frequency of heavy atom, divide by frequency of light atom. Just take a ratio. If alpha is different, this ratio will be different because frequency of light atom doesn't change, frequency of heavy atom does change. So you can compare this ratio from cosmic spectra with laboratory value and conclude if alpha is the same or not. You can do even better. There is dependence on angular momentum. You know that the relativistic correction comes from small distance because electron is fast near the nucleus. Potential is big, electron is fast. So for S wave electron, the relativistic corrections are large, for some D wave electron, they're small. So you can have different signs. So we can compare different transitions, different angular momentum. From excited S electron to P state, relativistic corrections will be positive. If you excite D electron to P state, relativistic corrections will be negative. And it's good, because they're very different. Again, take ratio frequencies and compare the laboratory value. In ratios, the shift disappears. Technically, it's done a little bit different, but the idea is basically this one. So what we have finally? Quasar, gas cloud. There are some spectra, there are laboratory spectra, and we change alpha until we match. So we need dependence of energy on alpha squared for each line. That's all. So we do it numerically. We just, this is a value in laboratory. This is coefficient which you need to find from calculations. And this bracket is approximately 2 delta alpha over alpha, 2 alpha over alpha. So it's alpha squared far away, alpha squared in laboratory minus 1. If alpha is the same, this term just vanishes. So we just can find Q by weighing alpha in computer codes. And as a side result, we can obtain non-relativistic world. So if C infinity, we have non-relativistic limit. Method which we used is maybe more sophisticated method, which is available now in the physics. You use zero approximation of the relativistic Hartree-Fock method. Then you take energies, wave functions, and green functions in this Hartree-Fock field and develop perturbation theory between on the difference of exact Hartree-Fock Hamiltonian. Because this zero approximation is good, perturbation theory is good, you can get very accurate results using this perturbation theory. We use this method for other purposes. For example, if you heard about parity violation in atoms, and interpretation is based on our calculation, and it was calculation was done before accurate measurements, so it was kind of unbiased test, and also predicted spectra of unstable elements, which will measure later. It's another test. So basically, this works, all I want to say. And this is a simple case how energies may depend on alpha. Non-relativistic limit, there are multiplets, which are degenerate levels. Then you increase alpha to present value, you have some splitting and motion of all levels. It's not only splitting, it's motion of all levels. This is a simple case. A more complicated case is heavier atoms and dense spectrum, when you have level pseudocruise and complicated behavior, dependence on alpha. It's not just simple dependence on alpha squared. But anyway, because we do numerical differentiation, you can find the limits at this point. And it's all what we need.
Okay, can we look again to this linear picture? Is it a really correct picture? Because you have effective quantum number nu. It's actually also dependent on alpha, so I don't think this should be.
No, this is numerical result.
Yeah, but when you are close to a certain point alpha zero, you don't, you are not interested in shifting the effective value because of the high energy correction.
No, but
when you have alpha from zero, what do you use for the effective quantum now?
No, you use nothing. It's just numerical contours.
Yeah, but
so I'm afraid of misunderstanding here. You don't use this formula.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's only explanation.
Okay.
It's just what we use is here.
Okay.
It is what we use here. We don't need effective quantum numbers. Okay. We only need Z and alpha. That's all.
Okay. And you do ab initio calculations.
Ab initio calculations. There is no empirical parameters. It's just completely ab initio calculations. Final diagram technique, which builds effective Hamiltonian for external electrons. And then the organization of the Hamiltonian for external electrons. Okay. So these are results. There are light tetons, which are anchor lines, which means that there is practically no difference in alpha. Units are centimeter minus one. So this is frequency, this is Q, which is small. There are negative shifters, which is excitation of D electron to P state. In this case, electricity corrections are negative, so frequency decreases if alpha increases. And there are positive shifters, so it's excitation of S electrons in these states. And the same atom may have different transitions. For example, with iron, if you excite D electron to P state, it has negative shifter. If you excite S electron to P state, it has positive shifter. So in principle, even single iron is enough for this purpose. But to get more statistics and maybe more control, better to use all lines. These are not used mainly because there are no laboratory values of frequencies available. There are values that are older and not accurate enough. And what is important? Because we have very different amplitudes and sign. So in principle, it's a perfect control of systematics. First, you can measure it here, but then you can control systematics. But for this, you need infinite statistics. So far, it hasn't been done with full strength because you don't have infinite statistics. You need to average all lines. But in principle, it's kind of distant future. This equation will be resolved. All the problems will be resolved because you cannot imitate this very complicated feature that systematically gets. So potentially, it's a very powerful method. But it hasn't been explored to full strength here. Then there is another method. You can have hyperfine structure, which is alpha squared and magnetic moments, just magnetic G factor and ratio of electron to proton mass in atomic chemistry. And there is rotational interval, electron to proton mass in atomic chemistry. If you take the ratio, you will get this alpha squared times magnetic G factor. So it's also sensitive to alpha squared. Okay. So this is 2001 picture. I don't have a better one. Michael maybe have. So, but it combines different methods here. This is this radio method, which gives you zero. This is average of optical data, 7 points here. Here is redshift. And here it's loopback time, which is better for non-astronomers. One corresponds to Big Bang, zero present time, and here half of the lifetime of the universe. So you see something is going on. So according to this data, alpha was different in the past. I think I will get two talks today and maybe more talks later. We'll describe this in detail. So far, the picture is the following. From Keck telescope, where is data shows non-zero result. From DLT, results are controversial. And I think it will be discussed today, so I'll just keep this topic. Spatial variation. In principle, this there are data from two telescopes where we observe different hemispheres. So we can combine data and get a dependence of alpha in space. Again, results here are not clear because there is some disagreement for VLT data. So we leave spatial variation to the time when this disagreement will be resolved. Then we go to second parameter. I still use cosmic data, but I told that there is also dependence on electron to proton mass. So it's the same as dependence on electron mass on the lambda intensity. There is a ratio of hyperfine to optical transition. It contains pretty complicated parameter. But because we know something about alpha variation, we can say about variation of electron to proton mass. And this result shows no variation. Range of redshift is approximately from 0.2 to 2.2. It's pretty big. So it's average over 9 quasar absorption systems. Then the more sensitive method so far is with ammonia spectra. Here we have a wonderful transition. It's actually brought Nobel Prize already. It was Towns made major on this ammonia. So hydrogen may tunnel on other part of nitrogen. And because it's tunneling transition, level splitting is exponentially small. If level splitting is exponentially small, we have exponential sensitivity to electron to proton mass ratio. Because here, S is dimensionless, this exponent, factor here in exponent is dimensionless. It can only depend on the electron to proton mass ratio. So just numerical calculation shows that this dependence is pretty strong. Analytical estimate is also possible. So this was used to extract so far best limits to electron proton mass ratio. And these results are consistent with zero. Just for future comparison with laboratory measurements, it corresponds to 10^-16 per year, approximately 6.5 billion years ago. And these results in our galaxy is not zero. So Michael Kozlov probably will tell about it more. It's in our galaxy, it's not, redshift is zero. So it's kind of very interesting conclusion.
And again, you found no variation of the mass ratio from the same part of universe where you see variation of alpha.
I'm not sure, it's close.
Yeah, the redshift is 0.6.
It's smaller redshift. Here, there is no real variation of alpha. If you see real variation in data, at least, what data shows, real variation starts from redshift 1.
Yeah, but...
here, it's redshift is 0.68, that is more.
But models which you mentioned, they say that very likely the type of variation is 30 times faster than variation of, mass variation is 30 times faster. And you see opposite picture.
I'm not sure that you should ever refer to model when they compare standard data.
Yeah, still, no model expects that mass ratio will vary slowly. And some model expects that mass ratio will vary order of magnitude.
I'll show you the picture, and you can see it anything. Very much simple. It depends on theory. I show a theory that perfectly explains this. Because.
Until the next.
Yeah, but probably I'm no time to show it, but I made the same words. According to models, which will be discussed, major variation happens in the time when we have change of equation of the state of the universe. And last change was about redshift 1. So it's perfectly okay. Have no variation for the shift 0.6 and variation for the shift 1. It's not smooth, it's just step function. Last variation, last change of equation of the universe will transition to this dark energy domination. Then there was another measurement. The orphans are here, so I hope I will explain the result, but if it's correct, it looks absolutely fantastic. It's big variation, much bigger than variation of alpha. And it's formally, there is no contradiction with previous data because redshift here is higher. And so it may be indication of space-time variation and even hint in favor of grand unification because here variation is much bigger. But not everybody agrees with this result. And finally, I want to mention open nature nuclear reactor here. It was active about 1.8 billion years ago. And it produced a lot of nuclear reactions, of course. Not the only this one, but this one is a special one. It was picked by Schlachter first. Because this reaction, neutron capture by Samarin, is dominated by low energy resonance. And position of this resonance has a big coefficient, about 1 MeV. So position of the resonance shifts by 1 MeV times delta over alpha. Resonance itself is only 0.1 electron volt. So it's a perfect case to study variation of fundamental constant. People measure ratio of abundance, for example, 149 over 150, and try to estimate its cross section and position of resonance. What we did, we realized that it's not, alpha variation is not the best case. Basically, there is bigger sensitivity to this parameter, quite mass over number capacity. Naturally, it's stronger interacting system, so they have bigger variation to quite mass over number capacity. For normal quark, at least 10 maybe. For strange quark, the coefficient means maybe even bigger. So when these are latest measurements. Well, in 2004, was not zero result, but they almost simply increased their bars. So far, all the results are consistent with zero. But here there is an important assumption. Because it's assumed that variation is small, but actually any resonance has two tails. You understand this? You imagine picture of resonance. For the same cross-section, there are two solutions. So there is non-zero solution. It's not the end of the story, actually. There are many resonances. So if you seek for solution from next resonance, there will be another non-zero and so on. So it's obtained an assumption that variation is small. And all the picture, of course, is very complicated. Start from geochemistry. Goes all through the physics. It's interesting from the point of view of physics, but it's pretty complicated in terms of reliability of the result. Okay.
So, have people measured this level structure of samarium in terms of looking at the other resonances?
No, of course, the position of resonances are normal. It's just the tables of neutron gate. I could do it myself, it's 5 minutes work, I just don't bother.
In principle, if we are interested, we can ask Justin in the last day of the conference to tell us more about Tokla than about spectroscopic measurements.
Okay, yeah. Let's proceed. We'll come to this point. Atomic clocks. It's probably the biggest activity now, just the number of people involved. Progress is amazing. In optical transition, we can measure alpha. In microwave transition, both alpha and strong interaction parameter. So calculations here for alpha variation for optical transition, there is no difference to what I call. It's just where I gain positive shifters, negative shifters, and center lines. And I think we calculated this condition Q for all available clocks. If someone needs a new one, we'll just do calculation. Code is active, so whatever is needed, it may be calculated. But again, the picture is the same. Positive shifters, negative shifters, and curve lines. And actually, the best limits now obtained in this method is a ratio of mercury optical transition to aluminum optical transition. It gives absolutely fantastic results, but there are also many other results available. Microwave transitions. Here, the picture is more complicated because it's high-defined transitions. It's magnetic interaction is involved between electron and the nucleus. So it's sensitive to alpha, and it's sensitive to nuclear magnetic moments, and it's actually a little bit sensitive to nuclear radiation. So here we have alpha, here quark mass over lambda capacity in this part. Again, we try to do calculation for everything is available. When it's tail V, it's maybe three, or maybe better say four different groups, experts in different fields. So it's QCD calculation for magnetic moments, several calculations, which more or less agree with each other in different measures. There is nuclear calculation, there's mass exchange theory, and there is atomic calculation to calculate alpha dependence. One of the interesting observations that cesium standard is not sensitive to variation of quark mass over the QCD. It doesn't mean that sensitivity is zero, but it's small. So if you compare, say, optical transition to hyperfine transition, my advice just means electric dependence, because the bigger dependence is from electron to proton mass ratio. So you have dependence on alpha, you have dependence on electron to proton mass, you can just ignore this term. It's the safest thing to do because it's only 1%. When you compare to hyperfine, it's not a good idea because all the dependence comes from this term, also dependence on alpha, so here you need to keep it. But for all optical comparison, all.
So you kind of mix different languages here. There is a proton mass and quark and lambda.
Yeah, except for simplicity. No, it's very easy. I have results in both ways.
Right?
I have results in both ways, but just deliberately, because I want to show this physical parameter. I wrote it in this way. For hyperfine transition, all these factors just cancel out. So concentration to hyperfine transition. For ratio optical to hyperfine or molecular to hyperfine, it's civilized. So this is more important than this structure.
And principal use of molecular transition in different model dependent way, and the relatively recent results, perhaps 1 year ago, from Chardonnay group in Paris, measure with molecules. So, you say Buddhism cool. You have a bunch of Yukawa constants which couple quarks to the average value of the Higgs field. If constants are varying, why this Yukawa parameter should be the same? And in this case, we have no MQ. We have MU, MD, etc. So we have no reason to think that all parameters are the same.
We have no reason to believe all parameters
are
the same.
We have no ideas about origin of this Yukawa couple.
But actually, it's what in believing MQ is MU plus MD over 2. So it's average value of quarks. It appears naturally.
Yeah, but it's fuzzy because if you believe that.
So you have your talk, okay? Okay, you it's all your focus about this, my understanding. So you don't need to start now.
No, I didn't speak about this at all.
Okay. So I stick to modern theory. I'm 100% sure, or 99% sure, that this Yukawa Kaplan scheme is wrong. Yeah, but I can't do anything because there is no better theory. I don't mean it's wrong numerically, I just think that Higgs theory for electron mass and quark mass isn't correct, but it's my belief. So I keep it in myself.
You mean point like Higgs theory or any Higgs theory?
Sorry?
You mean any theory?
No.
Or theory leads to point like
Higgs? You can't couple to quark mass and electron mass.
Okay, so you like to substitute someone by that.
Yeah, but it's not, again, I don't know this substitution.
Okay.
But hopefully it will be. But we stick to modern theory because it's better than Ken Wave. So these are only recent results. There are more of them. And again, these results are fantastic. It's just if you realize what people did during the last several years, this was breakthrough. It was nearly two orders of magnitude. And again, there will be talks about this. And because there are many measurements, many measurements, you can decouple different forms. What is important here? Because sometimes people are confused. Okay, the variation in astrophysical spectra is 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the minus 6. Yes, 10 to the minus 6 mostly now. Yes? Here it's 10 to the minus 16. But if you divide 10 to the minus 6 by 10 billion years, you'll get 10 to the minus 16. So amazingly, sensitivity is per year is comparable.
Just so, because if in astrophysics you will find something much stronger, nobody will believe you. And
no, it's not true.
Parents.
So I'm not astronomer. I don't have much experience of this part, but I believe they are honest. all what you're talking, they find, they don't find. It's just. It's a cruel accusation. The people are honest. What we see, what
sure.
They show, what they see.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If they see non-zero, it doesn't mean it's non-zero. It must be tested. But they are honest.
Sure.
It's true, but you know, there is a cultural shift that you know people in astrophysics community sometimes drop you know very strong statements like, look at this star. We see that you know. Lithium abundance is off, standard model is wrong, and now we're going to look at another star, right? And people in particle physics community go immediately mad, like, wait a minute, what's going on?
No, but there is another problem. What all this worry, why is all results are zero, deep inside standard deviation? Particle physics still is nonsense. Because you cannot have 20 results all within standard deviation. It contradicts the statistics. It's a different culture.
Because if you look, if you will write affiliations, not the names, you will find that all of these results were obtained in meteorological institutions.
Yeah.
Where people, if they have any questions, they prefer to be on the conservative side and not on the over optimistic side.
So it's not statistical error, always
say. No, sure. In all experiments, I think the estimation of error came from a systematic error, and they just tried to be more conservative. In contrast to astronomical community, yeah. where people are more optimistic.
Yeah, yeah. 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 Motivation
for adding. I haven't finished here. Yeah. So this is another possibility here. You can have enhanced relative effect just by selection. You can try to find levels which are very close to each other and consider relative between these levels. So this is very fortunate. We found such level in a couple of levels in this project. In tables, energies are exactly the same, but these levels are of different nature. So one level goes up, another level goes up, down. So if you measure relative change in frequency, you have huge enhancement. The enhancement factor is about 100 million. So variation of relative variation frequency is 100 million times bigger than relative variation of power. So here you don't need 16 digits. So maybe some 9 digits will do. And this is
almost astronomical materials.
It's complementary way, maybe, yeah. Complementary way to search for variation of all. What is the problem here? States that one of the states is not narrow. So actually people are forced to work within a different level. Dima Butker will tell about this later. So it's indeed it sounds similar to astronomy. People also work inside the grid. But honestly, prove accuracy by three orders of magnitude. He will tell himself. But here one of the levels is not narrow. So there are other examples here. Again, I don't think we are better than this protein. They are just alternative variants. So we try to look further. And the case when levels are both very close to each other and narrow exist in molecules. There may be cancellation between electron excitation and vibrational energy. So one is excited state electron, another is vibrational excitation above ground state. There may be cancellation between the rotation interval and height interval. So levels accidentally close because one is different rotational state, another is different hyperfine component. And the base case I know is cancellation between fine structure and vibration because it gives a lot of opportunities. Because fine structure, excited fine structure state, energy is proportional to Z squared alpha squared. Vibration is proportional to ratio of electron to proton mass square root 1.5. So we can simply solve the equation and find a lot of molecules which satisfy these conditions. Because
But this is a certain danger for systematical effects. If you have two close levels where it could be one photon transition, it's very hard to measure it because they are very sensitive to residual electric.
No, I don't discuss question of systematics, yes.
Nearly degeneration of two levels, even narrow, is not enough. Perhaps the better situation is when there is no one photon transitions between them. It's possible perhaps to use kind of what they call in laser physics CPT methods, which is not CPT from particle physics, it's coherent trap population techniques. And in this case, it could be two photon transitions where you try to keep the difference of frequencies, but not the frequencies itself. But if it is one photon transition, it should be so sensitive to various residual electrical fields that a strong enhancement is simultaneously advantage and disadvantage. Because enhancement means very close
levels. Externally, for these measurements, knowing how the electric field is almost the easiest thing to do.
And still, in molecules, it's also quenching effects. So I'm just afraid.
Okay, but anyway, the same in cesium, for the same frequency, you can shift 10 to the 6 hertz. Here, shift is about 0.1 hertz or even bigger. So, if you compare with the same frequency, shift is much bigger. And finally, nuclear clock. It's a very good case. To my taste, again, a theoretical taste, I don't know how it's experimentally.
Terrible.
Nucleus, thorium, has a very low excited state. It's actually usually one transition from this excited state to ground state, but the nuclear magneton, therefore it's very narrow. So it's M1 transition, but nuclear magneton is 1,000 times smaller, temperature is million times smaller, so it have very large lifetime. And nucleus is very well sealed from environment, so it's a good case. So I did an estimate, and it was argument about this. And that's all, there are a lot of other works here, including works of different authors. And basically, enhancement is confirmed. So there is significant enhancement here, again, because of a small frequency. Small frequency in denominator. Enhancement some 4 to 5 orders of magnitude. And here it's a relative enhancement, it's also absolute enhancement, because we deal with nuclear scale. So shift is, in this case, 10 to the 4 hertz for this change in frequency. And you compare with optical shift, which is about 0.14. So it's both absolute and relative enhancement. The only problem here is that this level, this transition has never been seen directly. It was found as a difference of two transitions, to ground state and excited state. It's very reliable, because there are, it's not a single transition, it was probably 40 transitions.
What is reliable, this number?
Yeah, but these levels do exist.
Oh, yes, but not this number.
But not this number, because it's different. It's gamma transition frequencies from 30 kV to 400.
At some moment it was 3.5 plus minus half.
Yes, just one, yes, just
one. But could you tell about you and Emil what they're doing?
I think there will be talk about this here, so I'll probably skip
it. It will be talk.
Okay. Yeah. So the experimental activity continues, and I maybe it's better to ask focus what we're actually doing. Technical part is here, he knows what he is doing. The representative of the build group is here, so better ask her.
Okay.
So I think sooner or later.
Blue is from Argonne or
Blue from Argonne. So sooner or later it will be found. Another case. I thought it's mostly entertainment, but people took it seriously. I'll explain why. It was just recently there was a talk by Gibble, and he took it very seriously. So there is, you just look around, you can always find enhancement. For example, there is scattering of cold atoms or molecules in Bose condensate, Fermi condensate, just separate molecules. A scattering length, if you remember definition, cross-section is proportional to scattering length squared. So basically, it's measurement of cross-section of cold collisions. And we found that variation of this scattering length may be many orders of magnitude bigger than variation of electron to proton mass ratio. In narrow resonance up to 12 orders of magnitude, if broader resonance, it comes up to the smaller. You can tune to narrow resonance just using magnetic field. If no tuning, the enhancement is not so big, it's about 1,000. But anyway, I thought it's a toy, but these guys considered it seriously, and they invented a method how to measure scattering length. It was talked recently, they really do an experiment. So, good luck, I would say. So, and final talk. I think it will be explained more in theoretical works, but I just mentioned it. So, in principle, these models, which give variation of fundamental constant, can also give variation of scalar potential or gravitational potential, which is proportional to scalar potential. So, people did some measurements, and there are some projects. Project is to use atomic clocks and satellites on space. You can use some spectra from space. Strong gravitational field. But so far, the best limits is obtained in laboratory, because Earth moves an elliptic orbit, and there is 3% change in distance to sun. It's not much, but it allows to extract the values. There was very accurate measurements in NIST. Mercury to cesium and hydrogen to cesium. It's mercury optical to cesium standard and hydrogen to cesium standard. So we did a calculation, extracted limits on these parameters, which shows dependence of alpha and electron to proton mass ratio, quark mass to proton mass ratio on gravitational potential. So there are only limits now. It doesn't contradict theory because theory predicts smaller value. If you believe in theory, of course. There are even better limits from, not better limits, but independent limits from dysprosium and strontium. From dysprosium, the same close levels. And because it's third measurements and three constants, you can decouple all the results. And there is more recent measurements, strontium cesium comparison, and it gives new burst limits. I think it will be discussed here, so I'll skip this topic. There is a representative of this group who will give a talk. So this is the conclusion. So optical data and this main multiplet method led to huge increase of sensitivity, 100 times. But there is center lines, positive and negative shifters, which in principle give you control of system lines. But so far people have to average over all data, so we have less control if it's possible in principle. And situation is controversial. So we scan data because it's only done by one group, so it's not clear how is it final conclusion or not. Maybe not. But nobody will with cake data now, according to my understanding. And there is
weird.
Sorry?
Yes, we are.
You do, yeah?
You do, yeah.
You
also. Talk.
Okay, you'll talk.
That's said it's not.
And VLT result. VLT result, which is a lot of activity recently, and situation is controversial. So it's systematic effects, and when this question of systematic will be settled, it's also an excellent way to measure special variation, because these telescopes observe different hemispheres. Electron to proton mass ratio. Surprisingly, there is some similarity in these two cases. There is no variation at small redshift, and there are some claims of variation at higher redshift. And it will be discussed here again. And so, if you take results at face value and don't argue, it may be argument in favor of grand unification because variation is bigger by electron to proton mass ratio. Big band nuclear synthesis. If you assume it's variation, it's under assumption that it's due to variation, you can get results for variation of quark mass along multiplicity. Okla, now we have only limit. It's mostly sensitive to quark mass along multiplicity. Atomic clocks is a present time variation of alpha and mass electron quark mass along multiplicity. You can have enhanced relative effects in atoms and molecules, and you can have absolute enhancement in thorium. And finally, there is dependence of fundamental force and gravitational potential, which may be studied. It's another active field of study now. Just a general conclusion. So far, nobody has seen variation for small redshift, except with this work, which will be presented by Marco Kozlov, and hint for variation at high redshift. That's all.
So, just one more possible method. I think Maxim wrote something on it a few years ago, which was to look at isotopic ratios in meteorites. But I don't know what the status of it is now. Maxim has anything changed in this. But I think one possible benefit is that these nuclear decays dependent on fundamental parameters may be slightly more easy to calculate, but not both, although it's not absolutely so sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I comment on this? Yes. In fact, these experiments which look for alpha variation for high redshifts are also sensitive to isotope abundances. So in fact, you can use the same array of data on quasar spectra just to study isotope abundances in there at redshifts more than one.
Or is referring to some exotic things like premium and so on.
Right.
There are four frogs. Couplings, integrated kind
but
of couplings.
Yeah,
it's not that simple because you need to integrate over time from later time to present time. So I'm trying to avoid the discussion because
The sensitivity which is there in these alpha variation studies is exactly of the order of magnitude you need to look for isotope of atoms.
Okay, so that, I mean, if you're like looking at a lump of rock and looking at an absorption system, I was talking about it when you look at a lump of rock that has arrived and has hopefully not been doing anything for the last 4.5 billion years.
Okay, I have a small question. What is about OH data? Since I've heard data about radical of OH.
Someone can tell about this more than me, so I can discuss
that. There is a strong limit from OH 18 centimeter line. It is sensitive, this line is sensitive to alpha and to mu.
Okay.
It's a
but
good
it's,
point.
You say that concerning here the last line, OH is in agreement with.
Yeah, there is no.
Okay.
This is from the same system which has ammonia as well, I think.
Yeah.
The problem is all the measurements of radio molecules is on three systems, I think. Different molecules are detected from the same systems. The values, if you assume other constants are not varying, mu is very close to the value you get from ammonia. I think.
The full sensitivity of that also hasn't been realized yet. It's, if you can detect all these OH transitions at once, which no one's really done yet in these absorption systems. And that gives you another order of magnitude sensitivity.
Okay, so here's the last questions to Victor and Mark. So will you have a break or will you...
We don't have a 5 minutes break.
We don't have a 5 minutes
break. Yes,
so 5 minutes
Mark
break.
Will adjust his computer and you'll have some coffee.
5 minutes break and after that we have another